Right. Okay. I suppose we'll start shortly. Good. 1:30 promptly. No problem.
Yes. Okay.
Government agencies this morning, SIU, Hawks, NPA, to this meeting, which is to update us on issues related to COVID-19 corruption. And the progress being made in so far as all the cases is concerned. It does seem to be a marathon meeting if you look at the presentations that were sent. One file, of course, was giving us serious headaches. It was just so large. And that's, of course, indicative of the extent of the rot and the corruption which has characterized COVID-19. So I was not surprised at all when we had those problems. Colleagues, we're going to jump right into it because time is certainly not on our side, given the extent of the work that we have to do today and the very extensive presentations which are going to be before us. We are here because we, of course, are in wanting to understand whether there is movement insofar as corruption cases is concerned, and that the arrests we see translate into successful prosecutions. So we only take joy if at the end of it all, there are recoveries and that people are actually sent to prison. So colleagues, I would wish to welcome all of you to the meeting with the hope that you are all well. And without any further ado, if we can, as the Stormy put Ben, please just enter the apologies into the record that members had actually sent through. I'm going to hand over to the SIU, and then from the SIU, we will go to the NPA and the Hawks, which I hope before General Libya starts his presentation, will be able to get an explanation as to why it's a joint presentation. It is our view that under the circumstances, everybody must be held accountable for their own set of functions and responsibilities. When we get to that point, Wab General will be able to take us through that particular one. So without any further ado, let us jump right into it. And hand over to the head of unit of the SIU for the presentation, and then we will move on to the next one. And colleagues, we will then interact once we have received both presentations. Thank you. All right, over to you, HOU.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I greet the honorable members of the committee. I also greet my colleagues, the NDPP and the Lieutenant General Libya from the Hawks. We are going to go straight into the presentation, Chair. We have included some of the preliminary slides, which I will not go through as the SCOPA is already familiar. We presented them to SCOPA before, but it's really around vision and the mission. The outcomes that we seek to reach on slide 5. Slide 5 is about the outcomes that we seek to reach as we present. We will be, as we present, slide 6 and 7 is our strategic approach that we have adopted. We're conducting these investigations in the context of our strategy to improve the performance of the Special Investigating Unit. I will not go through all of those. Chair, I'll go straight now to slide number 9. This slide, we have thought it appropriate to just put context to SCOPA in the context of the expenditure that the National Treasury put out for the country to spend on COVID-19 relief funds that were allocated. Then relate our investigation to this expenditure and indicate the percentage of the expenditure which is subject to our investigation, of course, based on the allegations we have received against particular contracts. For this purpose, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, with your permission, Chair, I'll hand over to our CFO who did the number crunching. And he will not spend a lot of time on this because time is not on our side. We will go straight into the investigations afterwards. CFO, Mr. Hernandez, over to you.
Right, that's fine.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, HIU, Chair of the of SCOPA and Honourable Members. This slide just depicts then, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was an amount of 145 billion allocated by government. And at the end of August, by the end of August, and these statistics we received from National Treasury, there was about 15.6 billion spent on national and provincial level. And down at the bottom, you will see that it is mostly spent on health and then support in terms of the grants. Next slide. Zooming into the national departments, this depicts the on a monthly basis the expenditure as it went through the books. And you would see that most of the departments, especially on SASA defense side, the big expenditure came in the month of July. Police slightly earlier, as expected, they had to buy some PPEs. So the big expenditure in police in April of 2020. Next slide. If we then zoom into expenditure on health, to the left of the leftmost graphs indicate the expenditure per province then, specifically on health. And one would see that Gauteng, KZN, and Limpopo was the biggest spenders on health for the period under review until end of August. And to the right, that is the sum total of expenditure on basic education and other COVID interventions for all provinces. This makes up the 7.9 billion. Next slide. Honorable Members, depicts against the 15.6 billion, what is currently being investigated by the SIU, and this is again on provincial and national department level. So currently under investigation, 10.5 billion, representing 67%, and of that 10.5 billion, plus minus 223 million is currently already in the special tribunal, of which you'll see the details a bit later. Next slide. The majority of the expenditure made of the 15.6 billion from the SIU side, more than 90%, 9.7 billion relates to provincial expenditure. At this stage, a smaller percentage on local government, 352 million, and also a smaller percentage on national level. As the investigations go on, we expect that to change and to be more representative of the actual expenditure. Next slide. Same slide, this one. This is the value then of the PPE contracts and the investigation of which the SIU is currently mostly focused on. Gauteng by far standing out 4.3 billion, Eastern Cape 1.9 billion, and thirdly KZN, 530 million. Next slide. This is by category of procurement, and again, it accentuates the value of the PPEs of the total of 7.5 billion being 5.3 billion on PPEs. By far, the majority of expenditure went in there. Next slide. These statistics goes then into local government per municipality. The bigger spenders there in the middle of the graph, you would notice the metros of Cape Town, Ekurhuleni, Mangaung, Tshwane, City of Joburg, is 221 million. The numbering or the name just fell off there, and then Nelson Mandela Bay on 162 million. So the metros makes up the majority of the municipal expenditure up until end of September. Next slide. These then are the local government and the categories of spending per category. And whilst on provincial level, the majority of the expenditure is into health and on national level into the grants, on a local government level, one can see that the majority of the services is then community and social service. and housing per province. Thank you. I think that would be the last overview slide. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, CFO. So, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, in the context of that, as we indicated, the allegations were received based on some of the procurement processes that were allegedly irregularly conducted and the allegations of corruption related to those processes. We've sought out, obviously, to investigate. The proclamation was issued, Proclamation 23 of 2020. We then set up to investigate. I need to just indicate that the investigation, although independently conducted by SIU under that proclamation, we do interact with our colleagues, SCOPA, the Hawks, and then the NDPP, the NPA, and then other FIC and others who are at the, what we call the fusion center. That center has provided us with a platform to then sort of manage the overlaps and manage the dependency. In most instances, would depend largely on, for example, FIC to trace the monies. So that platform has created this interaction and cooperation. Of course, the matters that we present are those that came under our proclamation. Without further ado, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I'm going to hand over. Also, we've divided our presentation into the matters that are finalised, matters in progress, and we also touch on the outcomes that we have reached up to date. And we also go into matters that are at the special tribunal. So we will then present in that manner. The first part will be presented by our Chief Investigating Officer, Mr. Lakhetu, who oversees the investigations at national, and he also oversees and assists the provincial heads in the provinces. In the interest of time, we could not get all the provincial heads depending presenting. That was really going to not be efficient for purposes of the timeline we are given. I'll hand over to Mr. Lakhetu. If you can please take the Honourable Committee through the matters finalised, and then we'll take it from there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, HOU. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Member. I will be taking you through the investigation as conducted, and it's divided into finalised matters and also matters that are ongoing. So we'll start with the matters which we have finalised. And I will not go through each and one of them. I'll just highlight some of them. As you can see, the first one is Gauteng Department of Health, whereby we received the matter on the 5th of June 2020, where we're looking at procurement irregularities, and there we are looking at six contractors to the value of 625. The second one also relates to Gauteng, which is Southwest TVET College, received on the 1st of September. And there also the allegation was irregular appointment of service providers to relatives and friends at the college by the principal. And when we did investigation, we found that there were no PTE which were procured by the college. Therefore, there was no value that was to be indicated there. And the third one relates to National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. That's the Break Bridge one, where we're looking at irregular procurement process followed to the appointment of the main contractor and the principal agent. There we're looking at two service providers to the value of 4.2 million. The progress on this one will be highlighted later in the following slides. And if I can jump and go to the seventh one, it's KwaZulu-Natal, Department of Social Development, where we're also looking at the irregular procurement of 48,000 blankets. We're looking at four service providers to the value of 22.4 million. And we also looked within KZN Department of Social Development an irregular procurement of PPE where we looked at 16 service providers to the value of 21.2 million. And the last one, number nine, is the Limpopo, which relates to Skukuni District Municipality, received on the 9th of July. Also looking at the irregular procurement of service provider on emergency intervention. And there also we're looking at 8 service providers to the value of 26.3 million. When we go to the next slide, the first one, number 10, is Mpumalanga, Office of the Premier, where the date here is supposed to be 27/08/2020 when we received the allegation. Also, we're looking at the procurement irregularities relating to 6 service providers to the value of 32.9 million. And also still on number 11, Mpumalanga, we're looking at Mpumalanga Parks and Tourism Agency. Allegation were received on the 19th of 8 and 2020. We're also looking at the procurement irregularities, and there's one service provider that we are looking at. We can jump to number 14, Northwest Department of Health, where we are also looking at irregular award of a tender to a company without following a proper procurement processes. And there also we are looking at 2 service providers to the value of 8.5 million. If I speed it up and go to the last one, number 8, Western Cape 1, Department of Health, Tiger Beth Academy Hospital, and we're looking at alleged SEM irregularities there where it involved one service provider to the value of 9.9 million. Chair, this is all the matters that we have finalized. The investigation is finalized. Now I'll take you through the matters where the investigation is in progress. The first one relates to Gauteng Department of Health, where we received the allegation on the 5th of June 2020. Also there, we're looking at irregular procurement process followed in procuring goods and services from 201 companies for a supply of PPE goods and services and infrastructure projects in response to the COVID pandemic. Like I indicated, we are looking at 201 companies to the value of 4.9 million. And when you go to number 3, it's also Gauteng. We are looking at Tshwane Metropolitan Municipality, where it's alleged that 7 shelters were open for the homeless people to camp at the Caledonian Stadium during the lockdown. And here we are looking at the issue of the food parcel that were procured during that time. And here we're looking at 2 service providers to the value of 120 million. The fourth one also relates to Gauteng, which is related to South African Police Services, where we're looking at allegation of corruption by Silverton Police Station. There is one service provider to the value of 36 million. And if we go to the last one, number 8, is the Department of Correctional Services, where we're looking at procurement irregularities also relating to 23 service providers to the value of 50.3 million. If we go to the next slide, the first one relates to South African National Defence Force, where we're also looking at SEM irregularities relating to 204 companies to the value of 4.9 million. And this value might increase as we're still quantifying some of the costs. And the second one, number 10, also relates to the Department of Education, where we're looking at irregularities in respect of water tankers. And there we are looking at 121 service provider to the value of 220 million. When we look at number 14 is Eastern Cape Department of Public Works, where we're looking at refurbishment and alteration to hospital and clinics during COVID period. And we are looking at 84 service provider to the value of 1.6 billion. Number 17 also relates to Eastern Cape, where we're looking at Department of Human Settlement. And also here, we're looking at the construction of housing temporary structure. And it's 4 service provider to the value of 31.4 million. If we jump to the last one, number 19, Eastern Cape Department of Education, we're also looking at the irregular procurement of virtual classroom and tablets. There we are looking at one service provider to the value of 538 million. When you go to the next slide, we can start with number 22, which also relates to Eastern Cape Amatola Water Board, and we're looking at irregular procurement of water tankers. 36 service providers are involved to the value of 70 million. We can also jump to 25, Free State Department of Human Settlement. Also, we're looking at irregular procurement of the construction of temporary shelter. We are looking at one service provider to the value of 151 million. And number 26 relates to KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education, irregular procurement of PPE, 57 service provider to the value of 496 million. Number 28, also KwaZulu-Natal Office of the Premier, irregular procurement of PPE, 3 service provider to the value of 102 million. If we can jump, Chair, to number 32, Limpopo Department of Health, we're also looking at the irregular procurement of PPE. We are looking at 16 service provider to the value of 321 million. And when you go to the next slide, the first one, number 33, Mpumalanga Department of Health, we're also looking at irregular procurement, whereby we are looking at 5 service providers to the value of 18.6 million. Then we can jump to number 35, Mpumalanga Department of Culture and Sports and Recreation, where we're looking at irregular procurement for one service provider to the value of 4.7 million. Number 38 also relates to Mpumalanga COCTA, where we're also looking at irregular procurements for two service providers to the value of 6.5 million. I can jump over to the next slide, Chairperson. The first one is number 41, Mpumalanga Department of Education, irregular procurement, 9 service provider, and the first one amount is 89 million and 57 million. Number 43 relates to Northern Cape SAPS matter, where there's the tender allegedly awarded to a prominent official relating to one service provider to the value of 18 million. When we look at number 46, Northwest Rato Local
Can we please all mute our mics on the platform? We can't keep on having this conversation almost 8 months into lockdown. We're all familiar now with these protocols. Please. Sorry about that, Mr. Lofeto. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair. We can look at number 46, which is Northwest, Rato Local Municipality, where here we're looking at abuse of petrol cards during COVID-related travel. And here it's, we said not applicable, but it's one official involved. And the value now we determined that it's 5,000. And the next one is 47, Northwest Department of Education. Also, we're looking at irregular procurement processes without following the proper procurement processes, one service provider to the value of 6.7 million. Number 48, also Department of Northwest Department of Social Development, irregular award of tender, looking at 12 service providers to the value of 15.7 million. Chair, we can go to the next slide. We can start with number 53, Western Cape Department of Education. We're looking at irregular procurement of PPE, and we're looking at one service provider, and the value is 111 million. The next one, 54, it's also Western Cape, City of Cape Town, and it's also alleged tender irregularities, 3 service provider to the value of 52.8 million. We can jump to the last one, which is Western Cape, Kanaland Local Municipality, where we're also looking at irregular procurement of PPE relating to what service provider to the value of 450 million. Chair, this is all relating to the investigation that is ongoing. I'll hand over to Advocate Mutini.
Thank you, Mr. Lakhetov. Honorable Chair, thank you very much for that opportunity. So my colleague really tried to present the first part, as I indicated, is the matters that have been finalized and actions are being taken. The second part is the matters that are in progress. So we really tried our best to articulate and show them to the Honorable Committee. And of course, on an ongoing basis, we will continue to report on those matters and actions taken. But the next slide indicates on some of the actions that that have been taken and the outcomes that we have reached based on the investigations that have been finalized. On that slide, the first one is this slide is matters that have been instituted in the special tribunal. The first one relates to the Bay Bridge matter. That matter, the latest and status of it is that it appeared on the last Friday at the special tribunal, and it was so important just to really that the parties showed agency to go and have that matter tabled so that we go straight into the adjudication on the merits, and our intention is to set the contract aside and recover. Of importance is that the service providers have made that undertaking, which was made part of the order on Friday, that they would pay the amounts that could be ordered by the special tribunal. The other part of the outcome was that the department or the service providers would not claim what they had already started doing was to claim the outstanding amount. So as part of the order, they will not claim the what they thought or what they viewed as outstanding, and the department would not be obliged to pay pending the finalization of the case on merit. And the next part is the part that related to the procurement of motorcycles in the Eastern Cape. It also served at the special tribunal, and there we were successful in getting an order to prevent further payments to the service provider. That matter will also still go to the special tribunal on merits, where we now set the contract aside and seek to recover the monies that are worth to the department. The next line deals with various of service providers that are involved or identified up to now are involved in the Gauteng PPE procurement process. That matter also served at the special tribunal. So what we have done firstly was to seek to secure the amounts that were available so that when we do the civil recovery, we can have recourse to those amounts, of course, based on the evidence that we have uncovered that indicated wrongdoing onto the officials and to the accounts. And this part includes the accounts of the service providers involved. About 39 bank accounts were involved, and we also identified those officials who, as we always say to the Honorable Committee, that the phenomenon of officials resigning when faced with, when confronted with irregularities that they might have committed, they resign. So what we are doing is to ensure that they don't really just get away. We have thought it appropriate that, again, so that when the matters are finalized and we are able to have recourse to them, we should have recourse to some of the assets that they have. In this instance, we would then request the special tribunal to freeze their pensions. And this has really indicated to us that it sends the right message out there, that even if you resign thinking that there will not be consequence management, we will have recourse to some of your pension monies. The amounts there, it's about 139 million plus 43 million that has been involved in this matter. This case is also ongoing. There's a return date that has been put at the special tribunal, but we will still also go to the merits of the case. The next slide. This slide indicates the value of potential casino assets to be recovered. Honorable Chair and honorable members, the methodology that we use here to say is potentially recoverable in instances where, for example, we could have had the service provider to sign an acknowledgement of debt or acknowledgement of liability. You will see that there's various of them there where we have gotten the service providers to sign acknowledgement of debt. The approach that we are taking going forward is any form of settlement that the service provider offers. We would very much like to ensure that the department is involved, and if the settlement or any kind of acknowledgement that takes into account the interest of the department, we don't undercut anything that's due to the department. So on this slide, without going through it line by line, you'll see there that the Department of Social Development, this would have been, I think, in the KZN space. And then the next one is the Northwest Province, where there's acknowledgement of debt. Matikama, local municipality in the Western Cape. There's one, two, three. The fourth one is the Gauteng Department of Health, where we have engaged with the department so that the department stopped the payments of four service providers. Those would have been part of those other service providers that we mentioned above. But the department did heed the call. Of course, it's still subject to adjudication. They're preventing an amount of 80.3 million being further paid. In KZN, there was also in the Department of Education specifically, those are the amounts that have been acknowledged by one of the service providers. Now, the next one is the actual cash that has been recovered, what we could call money in the bank, so to speak. It's been recovered actually, and it's been put in the, what SIU does, we put those funds in a trust account and then ultimately transfer those account, those monies back to the state institutions, departments in this case. The next slide deals with the number of referrals made to the National Prosecuting Authority. As the Honorable Committee would know, that by law, when we pick up the evidence that there has been criminality committed, we then refer those matters to the...
I'm sorry, I'm in a meeting. Is this a marketing call?
To the National Prosecuting Authority. So the numbers, there's various forms of offences that we are of the view that the evidence we picked up reveals. But of course, the National Prosecuting Authority will obviously apply their mind and make up the decision whether the evidence is sufficient or not sufficient to prosecute or not to prosecute. Of importance is that we, of course, have found that various of the executives in the department, whether it's heads of the department or even including executive authorities. In our case, although we find that there's maladministration committed, but there's also contravention of the Public Finance Management Act. So as we know, that the Public Finance Management Act creates an offence, and I think the Municipal Finance Management Act creates a similar offence. So we are of the view that all of these people who have made themselves guilty, suggestedly or allegedly, as the evidence would have it, these people should face the consequences of their action in terms of the provisions of those legislation. So those are the matters that that to date have been referred. The next slide deals with the number of referrals made for disciplinary action. As the committee, the honourable committee would know that part of the outcome, those outcomes that we presented when we first started, as we do our investigation, we refer the officials who have made themselves guilty of misconduct. We refer them to the accounting officers or accounting authorities, as the case may be, and we expect that action should be taken against this this officials. Those are the number of referrals. The next column deals with the referrals for executive and or administrative action. In this regard, we have made a referral for administrative action. As you can see in brackets there, that was the administrative action against one MEC. And we are glad to know that the action has been taken in that regard. And then we also have referrals made to the South African Revenue Service. Those are matters where we are of the view that evidence indicates to the contravention of the South African Revenue Service mandate. And then we do refer to SARS so that they can take appropriate action. So that's the last part of these actions. So these actions would have been against some of the matters or those matters that have been finalized. Chair, if need be, we can map them matter by matter compared to the outcome. But we thought let's just indicate to the honourable committee the kind of outcomes that we have reached up to now. So we continue to monitor the implementation and execution and acting, implementing these referrals, just to make sure that we all get the results that we desire. Holding all those who are accountable, are responsible, we hold them to account. And part of our mission is to assist the Honourable Committee to ensure that as government, the integrity of public accounts is beyond reproach, and those who would have made themselves guilty should be held to account. We are seeing these actions, and we are really heartened that we will see consequence management. The next part, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, although I would have covered it at the slides above, our Dr. Wells, who is our chief legal, will just go through some of the matters that we thought we would emphasize. But we have seen that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that really the Special Tribunal is proving, again, to be a very important vehicle to alleviate the court roles in the High Court. It's proving to be a very effective process to do civil litigation. So I'm going to allow, with your permission, Honourable Chair, allow Dr. Wells to take the committee briefly through the civil litigation. And please, Dr. Wells, because of the time, the committee would probably have had the opportunity to read through the narratives. Please take the committee through the slides responsible for civil litigation. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
All right, no, that's fine. I'm HOU. You may proceed in that direction.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Just briefly, Chair, the much has been already said about the special tribunal, but just shortly, the special tribunal is created in terms of the special special investigating unit and tribunal act, and it has the mandate to adjudicate on all matters that the SIU investigates. So it is functioning as a court, and it basically has the narrow mandate and jurisdiction to focus only on matters and evidence obtained by the SIU. I think we can move to the next slide, Chair. Current cases has been briefly mentioned by my colleagues. On a previous slide, I noted there were three matters that has been an orders granted in those matters. One was by agreement and the others were granted where the matters were opposed or where the parties then conceded on the facts presented in the application. So in this FATCOM case, this is also the scooter case that the head of the unit has referred to. I think that has been dealt with extensively thus far. Next slide. This also involves then the matters at the Gauteng Department of Health chair. Presently, the status of these matters are that they will be, the return dates have been set for the 20th and the 21st of November. This is in essence to seek final orders, preservation orders concerning monies that have been restrained in terms of various bank accounts and monies that have been paid off by the department. It is also the return date for the finalization for the freezing of the pensions of the certain officials alluded to by Advocate Mutibi. Next slide. This is the matter, recent matter, finalized on Friday, already discussed in some detail by Advocate Mutibi. Just to mention that the further application that Advocate Mutibi referred to dealing with the merits, that will be launched within the next 20 days. This is by agreement of court order that application will be heard in the next issued and heard in the next 20 days in the special tribunal. Next slide. I think this also deals with the previous discussion already, and it forms part of the Royal Bacha matter already discussed. We can move to the next slide. Chair, this is just I don't know if the head wants to particularly deal with this issue, but it is a aspect that we have picked up in our investigations concerning awards of tenders and procurement awards being favoured to politically connected individuals. And the SIU has picked up some shortcomings in a serious threat to the legitimacy and lawfulness of procurement. Next slide. Thank you, Chair. I will then hand back to Advocate Matiwe.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, my colleague, Dr. Wells. Chair, the last slide, the last two slides that Dr. Wells spoke to, as he indicated, the being exposed, being politically exposed or connected, as it would be termed. I requested our legal team to go and research that part as we investigate, as we have indicated on the other slide, that part, the legal position as we stand today, it doesn't really prohibit or render. Where the procurement process has been followed, it doesn't render the procurement invalid or irregular based on allegations of being a member of the, or connected to a politically exposed person. So hence our recommendation that if there would be a need for legislative changes to then be able to mitigate that kind of risk. Chair, I've noted that our time is up. We're given about 40, 45 minutes. The next slide, I won't be long with them. These are the overview of investigations, our observations. We have observed overpricing of PPEs, and we have pronounced ourselves in various investigations. Possible recoveries relating to under-delivery by service providers, we will continue to do that. Service providers are awarded contracts over 1 million whilst not being registered for VAT. Those are the VAT irregularities that we've come across. Then we have found the use of emergency provisions that has been incorrectly applied. Of course, we are happy at this stage that the National Treasury withdrew those emergency provisions, and now the state institutions now conduct procurement under normal provisions. We have found that PPE price differentiation was beyond market-related prices. Service provider charged rates for the supply of PPEs in excess of the regulated pricing list as issued by Treasury. Certain service providers were found to have only registered on CIPC during February and March, and that really just was a red flag for us, the key risk indicator. Certain service providers were already in the deregistration process when they quoted and were awarded contracts. You know, that's really something to of worry. If you go to the next slide. The next slide, the type of goods supplied, the PPEs were not consistent with the nature of business registered on CIPC. So you'll find that there's a disconnect there, which really indicates that the service provider in question would not possibly have the capacity or the skill or the expertise to provide whatever is ordered. Again, we've said companies not registered on CSD. Non-essential goods were procured under the COVID-19 emergency provisions. Certain companies were awarded BBB points as level one contributors when they in fact did not qualify. There was non-compliance with procurement regulations. PPEs were delivered late and such had to be condoned by the heads of the departments. There were breaches in terms of the delivery mode of transport specified by some of the PPEs. Some PPEs, especially the surgical or medical part of the, of those PPEs, they've got specific regulations or prescriptions in terms of how they can be delivered. So our teams have determined that a large number of those were not transported accordingly. We found fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Services rendered were partially and not rendered at all, but payments were made. There was no verification of the work done, or if the work was in accordance with the agreement and in certain circumstances, no contract or agreement was found. So, Chair, this is really amongst others irregularities that are really form part of our observation. In terms of the risks we thought it appropriate to just present to the Honourable Committee, but as we sit today, we have been able to mitigate most of those risks that we have identified. The one risk that may not appear there is the risk about resources, and we have been on record with the honourable committee that we have submitted our resource requirements, you know, as part of the ACTT or JCPS forum. So we are hoping really that when the resource allocation is made, ultimately that all the law enforcement agencies will, number one, not be cut or be allocated resources which we so need. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll stop here.
Unmute, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, HOU and your team. Colleagues, I'm seeing that you are indicating to speak. I'd assume that we probably finish with the Hawks / NPA presentation and then probe them simultaneously given the overlaps that are there. Unless it's something very urgent and specific, I saw the hand of Honourable Van Meenen and Honourable Dolashe. I had hoped to proceed in the fashion of taking the NPA Hawks presentation and then probe simultaneously. I do know that Mam Dolashe will have to leave for the engagement of the ad hoc committee she's chairing. So I'll just want to hear from you, colleagues.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and the committee. I agree with your proposal that let's finish taking all the reports, Chair. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. All right, we will prioritize you when you come to questions so that by the time you go to that all-important ad hoc committee on the appointment of the new AG that you have had your stay in this meeting. Honourable Van Meenen?
I'm fine to wait as well. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. All right. Fantastic. Thank you for that cooperation. All right. General Lebeya, can I hand over to you, sir, on your presentation for the Hawks and the NPA, and then we'll take questions then. All right. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, and good morning to the Honourable Members. Firstly, we would like to clear, as the Chairperson has indicated, why the presentation of the Hawks is joined with that of the NPA. We shall also indicate that during the communication, we happened to receive the communication late on the 16th. But in the meantime, we were already discussing with the NPA on the present on the request that they had already received. That as we are dealing with the same matters, it would be appropriate to also join the NPA. Then we picked up that indeed there was an invitation to the Hawks separately, which we did not receive at the time. So it is for that reason, Chairperson, that we thought that as our matters that we are investigating are also shared with the NPA for prosecution or the confiscation of the asset, we may jointly present this. That is how we have joined the presentation, Chair.
All right, General. No, that is fine. I think we are that's okay. But I just do want to state for the record that our communication for this meeting was sent on the 2nd of October, and I'll request that you check with your good office after this meeting so that we deal with that. But I don't think it's something substantively for now. Safe to say that the paper trail for our communication here, this correspondence to your good office, was sent on the 2nd of October. But that is fine. I think your explanation in so far as why it's joined suffices, and then we'll hand over to you then to take us through the substantive matters and areas of the presentation. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Thank you very much, Chairperson. We indeed confirmed that when we were receiving on the 16th, they also sent the original one, but for some reason it did not appear on our side. But we acknowledge that it was indeed sent, but the receipt thereof is the one that posed a challenge. Chairperson, the presentation outline will be talking to the mandate of the Fusion Center of the ACTT, which is how we designed the presentation, the governance model, the approach and the methodology, the interventions to address corruption and maladministration related to COVID-19 relief funds, the update on the four operational pillars that we utilize, which is the prevention, the early detection, the investigation and prosecution, and the resolution. We will also talk on the overview of the cases that are currently in court, and then we will also hint on the timelines of cases under the investigation, and then we will conclude the presentation. With regards to the mandate, Chairperson, the Fusion Center is a platform of law enforcement collaborations to prevent...
I don't mean to interrupt you. Can your team please put the presentation up on the screen? I hope that the functions to share had been given to the General Libeya's team, just like we did with the SIU. It may
yes, be easier. Okay.
All right. If your team can just put the presentation up.
We are trying that, Chairperson.
Okay. That's fine. No problem. All right. I think we are almost there. No? All right, there we go. All right, fantastic. Thanks, General. All right, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Coming to the mandate, the Fusion Center is a platform for law enforcement collaboration to prevent, detect, investigate, prosecute, and recover assets relating to the corruption or related activities in respect of the COVID-19 relief. This is also to ensure that we counter the detrimental economic and social impact of the pandemic. Why this particular arrangement? There are those who are inclined to engage in activities to illegally benefit from government relief and containment measures. Globally, there has been a misdirection of government funds and increased corruption relating to COVID-19 funds. A swift and effective response will serve as a strong deterrence. The focus of this mandate is the real-time risk detection, followed by prompt coordinated action by law enforcement entities to ensure expedited investigations, prosecution, and recovery of assets. How this is done? This work is guided by the provisions of the Disaster Management Act of 2002. The ACTT, including the National Treasury, has identified areas of risk, for example, in the procurement space, in line with the international trends that indicate increased opportunities for fraud and corruption during times of health crisis. That is, in brief, the mandate of the Fusion Center of the ACTT. Coming to the governance structure. Coming to the governance structure, Honorable Chairperson, the government model of the fusion center is that the overarching body is the JCPS, the DG cluster. Sorry, Chairperson, it seems that the slide may have disrupted.
General, I think you may proceed for the purposes of time management.
All right. The overarching body is the JCPS DGs, and this is where the ACTT Executive Committee resolves. Below the ACTT Executive Committee is the Operational Coordinating Committee. That is where in the fusion center, activities are coordinated. Below that operational coordinating committee is the fusion center. Honorable Chairperson, we just indicate that the operational committee provide guidance to ensure optimal functioning of the fusion center. It oversee processes to detect and fast track investigations. So the fusion center have got what we call the operational hub. There is where coordination of activities at the fusion center is done. This is to ensure early detection of possible criminal activity, manage case intake process for case requiring a multi-agency, multidisciplinary approach. It also support the prioritized investigations through collaboration and joint focus on investigations. It is in this space where we also monitor the investigation on a decentralized operations. This is where work itself, the functional of the specialized staff are operating, that is at the decentralized level. There is also administrative support that operate in this space. That is where the fusion activities, Chairperson, take place. It is where we also fuse the input from private sector in the form of SAMLIT, the banking community, and the like. The next slide is just talking on the approach and the methodology that is happening at the fusion center. Chairperson, we will see that at the center is the operational coordinating committee that I have referred to. At the left-hand side is the prevention. That is a part of the activities that happens in the fusion center, focuses on prevention. The next block will be dealing with proactive detection. Thereafter, after proactive detection, it will be the investigation, and thereafter the investigation, it will be operational activities. Coming to the prevention is where we obviously deal with the issue of ethics management, the identification of risks, the data collection and management, the enforcement and of accountability and communication. The proactive detection space is where the media are analyzed through the coordination of the GCIS, other open source information, the liaison with the social media, etc., the whistleblowers reports, the reports in terms of Section 34 of the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act that is done to the DPCI. The anti-corruption hotline information, the crime stop through the SAPS, the intelligence report, the financial intelligence, the other intelligence report that is brought through by the crime intelligence, state security, as well as NICO. The information from COVID-19 response structures, such as the NCCG. The investigation part, this is where the identified in potential cases are dealt with. They are being registered as either dockets or inquiries. All departments and agencies verify against old database and provide enhanced information or intelligence. Allocate matters for investigation to relevant department or provincial offices. Collect evidence from witnesses, documentary evidence, financial records, as well as information from the banks. Here is where conduct of financial investigation is done. Securing of exhibits is dealt with coordinated at this center. There is evaluation and analysis of evidence for forensic activities coming from the data transactions. We also initiate recovery processes, either in terms of the POCA or the SIU tribunal. We prepare case for prosecution and prepare report for litigation. Processes of on fortnightly progress are dealt with at this operational hub. Then the operational committee engage with other stakeholders. So when this is done, there will also be a recovery and prosecution that will come. That is, in short, Chairperson, the approach that is dealt with at the Fusion Center. The next slide is just unpacking the pillars, talking to the first pillar of the prevention. In this regard, pillar number one, the response in response to allegation of corruption or related activities, including maladministration of the funds, in respect of South Africa's government fund relief and containment interventions such as a solidarity fund, which are intended to counter the detrimental economic and social impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Fusion Center was activated in May 2020 to focus on these collaborative activities with other law enforcement agencies. The Fusion Center is directed at detection, investigation, prosecution, and recovery of assets through a multidisciplinary approach. The Fusion Center comprises of various agencies which are listed as the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, the National Prosecuting Authority, both the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit, and the Asset Forfeiture Unit, the Detective Service of the South African Police Service, the Special Investigation Unit, the Financial Intelligence Center, the South African Revenue Service, the intelligence community such as the State Security Agency and the crime intelligence within the SAPS. Continuing on that pillar, the engagement interfaces have been established with departments in key areas affected by corruption around COVID-19 related procurement. We need to indicate that on the 23rd of July 2020, the presidential proclamation was obtained by the SIU, and the SIU has already presented on its activities in this regard. On the 6th of August 2020, the establishment of interministerial committee to ensure the improvement and transparency and accountability with regard to COVID-19 procurement was put in place to review the current approach in fighting corruption and make proposals to strengthen the fight against corruption. The ACTT has an act coordinated some of the activities with this environment. And the report released by the Auditor General in September 2020 is being analyzed to identify other viable matters for investigation, and several matters have already been identified that are currently under investigation. The DPCI is further established teams in all the provinces, including the team at head office. All teams are led by officers at the level of brigadier, comprising of all capabilities within the DPCI. A major general from a national office at the Priority Crime Specialized Investigation has been appointed to oversee and monitor all the investigation relating COVID-19 pandemic nationally, as well as to assist any challenges that may arise from the investigation. These teams are working in collaboration with the National Prosecuting Authority, as well as the Special Investigation Unit in the provinces. Coming to the breakdown of the teams that are currently in operation, the figures have been highlighted. I will not deal with those. It's just to show the team that have been put aside to deal with these matters. On the pillar, the second pillar two of early detection, here daily media scan is taking place at the fusion center by the GCIS. Matters that are attracting the attention of law enforcement are identified, which is where 174 matters have come through, among others, these activities. We have just listed the source of some of the information that is constituting the 174 matters that have been identified. As it can be seen there, Chairperson, there are 15 matters coming from Financial Intelligence Center. There are 37 matters that have come from the media space. There are 51 matters come from public complaints. There are 24 matters that come from the Auditor General of South Africa. And then there are 41 matters that come with the proclamation of the Special Investigation Unit. The next pillar, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, it deals with the investigations. The following table and a map provides a breakdown of the current case load, as well as an overview of the cases, incidents per province. The current case load, as I have indicated, is 174 matters. This include 6 criminal cases that are already on the court roll. At the table on the left-hand side, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is a breakdown of those 174 incidents. Looking at the first row is the matters under investigation. There we have got 154. Of these 154, 114 are still incidents that need verification. 40 of these are already case dockets. There is one matter that has been provisionally withdrawn. 6 of the matters are on the court roll. 10 of incidents are closed, including 3 case dockets, which makes a total of 13 that have already been finalized. So that is a breakdown. On the right-hand side, Chairperson, the map, the small map, just indicate where these incidents have happened. It can be seen that the majority of these incidents have been reported in Gauteng province, where there are 117. In Limpopo is 10, Mpumalanga 6, Northwest 7, the Free State 10, Northern Cape 4, KwaZulu-Natal 7, Eastern Cape 10, Western Cape 3. So those are the areas where this incident under investigations were reported. 24 cases and 27 inquiries are being investigated by the DPCI. So with regards to the breakdown of these cases and the inquiries that are investigated by the HOPS, we can say that these cases under investigation include application of relief fund through the UIF TERS, which are 8, and those coming from the Solidarity fund, which is two, and the abuse of the non-government organization is three, and the procurement fund is 38, procurement fraud. So cases reported are investigated at provincial level as indicated below, and with those six that are investigated at a national head office. In Gauteng is where we have got 10, the Free State 11. That unpacks the 51 matters that are currently handled by the DPCI. On the court roll is where we indicate that there are six cases. In these six cases, there are 19 accused persons that are standing before a court. The next pillar deals with prosecution, which is where the NPA comes in. The first row deals with the freezing of cash. This is dealt with by the Financial Intelligence Center using that FICA Act that they have managed to deal with those funds that are reflected in that row. The asset forfeiture unit of the NPA have dealt with the recoveries in terms of the Chapter 6 preservation. There are four matters that they have dealt with, which generated 5.4 million rands. And then I will not deal with the matters of the SIU as they have dealt with that in detail. And the next is the SARS, but they are not part of this, but SI Center at those. So with regard to prosecution, criminal prosecution, those six matters are sitting with the NPA at court, dealing with 19 accused persons. They are at various stages, which I will now unpack those matters that are in court. The first matter of those that are at court is it deals with the state versus Sepan Howard, Kohlole, and five others. This is a matter that was reported in May in Brooklyn. An employee of an entity, CSG Resolution, submitted a claim for UIF, Temporary Employer Relief Scheme, TERS, funding for employees on their payroll. The claim was lodged, and upon inquiry, the payment, it was noted that the amount of 5.6 million was diverted into a Capitec bank account. So six accused persons, namely Tsepan Howard Pohole, Daido Zulu, Diezgot Frimushela, Itumelen Chairman Masoko, Devoko Andres Masoko, and this in fact cafe are facing charges of fraud and money laundering. And the matter has been remanded to the 16th of November 2020. The AFU obtained a preservation order for five vehicles which were seized at the accused premises. They are currently in the process of lodging an application for final forfeiture and anticipated to be lodged by the end of October this year. The second case is that of state versus Tendisile patient Kumalo and five others, which is also a Sunnyside matter that was reported in June and the Pretoria matter that was reported in July. The director of the South African Nursing Student Fund reported that he was contacted by the accused, who informed him that the NPO received 50 million from the Department of Social Development. They directed him to meet with them to discuss the sharing of the funds. The investigation revealed that the director and his spouse's names were fraudulently used to secure the funds. Due to quick intervention by the department, they did not pay out the 50 million. So it became potential fraud. Six accused, namely Tembisile patient Kumalo, Mulanda Ngole, Julius Jeremiah Mbombo, Babrandevele, Maudensu, Ntukamiela, and Zekias Tavazwa are facing charges of fraud, extortion, and intimidation. And the matter has been remanded to the 1st of December for further investigation. The third case is that of State versus Tokozani Nkunu. And Chairperson, I will not be reading the details to stick within the timeline. The fourth matter is that of State versus Moses Leso, which is all these matters are on the roll. The fifth one is that of State versus Tlamalane Doris Mashimbi, which will also be coming again tomorrow for the determination of bail. And then the last one is that of State versus Sienki Thulani Vuma, which is postponed to the 29th of October for further investigation. Chairperson, as the time is limited, we just indicate that there is timeline that we intend to have more matters, 14 expected to be on the roll by the end of January. There are also certain factors that affect timelines with regard to the finalization of these cases. Among these are that several companies, individuals are mostly involved. And to obtain account and bank statement, opening of accounts and the like, all of these obviously require time. The company documentations, and then you're dealing with various boards of directors and the like, also require time. The tender process and the bidding process documents, all of these, as well as the minutes and the like, will be part of the investigation that is needed. The obtainment of the search warrant and seizures, the obtainment of Section 205 authorities to deal with other matters to ensure linkages is also requiring time. Determination of witness statement and then the obtainment of other evidentiary evidence such as computers and then other slips and the like, other records that are needed for the purpose of evidence. Legal instruments that are required by the Act is also part of those. In conclusion, Chairperson, we need to indicate that there is still an influx of the cases, especially that will be coming from the Auditor General, as indicated. There is also an indication that the Fusion Center does the prioritization of the matters that come to its attention. We work in terms of a multidisciplinary and collaborative approach between the various law enforcement agencies in the Fusion Center. And this is yielding some result, as some of the normal investigation would have taken longer than what we see some of the matters already at court. We expect that there will also be some successes that are coming. Maybe I need to conclude by saying that the next arrest will be taking place this Thursday. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I submit. Thank you.
All right, General, thank you very much to you and your team. And I'm sure, okay, the NDPP is here because this was a joint presentation. Can I give a few minutes to make comments and remarks on the presentation they've just made, or should provide any clarity, and then we'll go straight to questions, right? NDPP, over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you for this opportunity. Chair, perhaps I should maybe just address your comment at the start about separate presentations. You will note, Chair, this is a collaborative approach, and we are certainly, you know, the NPA comes at the end of a long process where matters actually, you know, go to court, but also there's the asset forfeiture process. And you will note there would have been a very small part of this presentation that would have related to the to the NPA specific work, let me put it that way, because all of the work is done in a collaborative way before that. So Chair, this particular approach in the Fusion Center is a new approach. It is a collaborative mechanism, Chair. That's the best way of putting it, because all the individual entities have and work within their own mandates, but the co-location of representatives from all of the entities involved in the Fusion Center, as set out by General Labia, in one space with a head of the hub and the operational committee, a lead person who coordinates, let me say a coordinator, has certainly assisted in getting better work and coordination between the entities. So it's even given the fact that we have in this time worked under constraints, including COVID, during a fair amount of time, the fact that these cases are coming through, that we've had asset forfeiture, preservation orders, is all very encouraging, Chair. So from the NPA side, in future, if the committee would prefer separate presentations, we would be happy to extricate it. But it's because it's a collaborative effort and it shows, a joint working methodology, we decided to combine it. But we will be in the hands of the committee in the future, Chair. Yes, those are my comments, Chair. We stand ready to take. My team is also online, and we stand ready to take questions, inputs. Thank you, Chair.
No, I think that is fine and well understood. We are all for collaboration. In fact, we will be interacting with the law enforcement agencies on the issues of the ACTT, because we have had fundamental concern about its inability to work and function in a manner which inspires confidence. I'm sure the NPPP remembers from our last interaction. So if there are efforts towards collaboration, that works even better, so that there can be a pooling and sharing of resources and to avoid unnecessary overlaps and to ensure that everybody is in the loop insofar as the pursuit of successful prosecutions is concerned. But of course, the NPA and any other entity must expect from time to time to report individually and independently of other bodies so that we can be able to gauge whether there is functionality, effectiveness and efficiency in your own internal operation. So I think that is well understood on our part, given the gravity of the situation and also that it's moving with speed, because we are dealing specifically here with COVID-19 related corruption. So I think the point on collaboration is well taken, and we will revert back to the issues of the anti-corruption task team, because we remain unsatisfied that things there are actually happening in a manner which inspires confidence or in the interest of a conveyor belt of law enforcement which will yield successful prosecutions and recoveries for the state. So I'm glad that in the main the key players of the ACCT are here and understand that perspective, that in that regard we do need to shape up, that there's no doubt about that. All right, colleagues, I think let us shoot to questions. So we will start with the Honourable Tolashe, and then Honourable Van Meenen, and Honourable Lees, and then Honourable Hatebe with an H. I'm starting with Honourable Tolashe because she does need to go chair the ad hoc committee on the appointment of the new Auditor General. So, and then Honourable Van Meenen will take you after.
Chair.
All right, Tolashe, over to, all right, and Honourable Nkonto, you can come
chair,
in.
Yeah, please. No, can you give me an opportunity after the other members, Chair?
Sure, no, that's fine. We'll add you into this, no problem at all. All right, and then Honourable Somyo, you will come in last. All right, colleagues, over to you. Mam Tolashe, shoot, and then other colleagues, please do mute. And then if you are on the platform, please turn on your camera, Parliament is streaming our meeting on all its platforms, and I think the seriousness of the issues we are dealing with today are of public interest, and we are the Public Accounts Committee. Right, Mam Dolasha, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members, and all the institutions that came to come and present to us. First and foremost, Honourable Chairperson, I really would want to congratulate the leaders of this institution by coming before us and explaining the work that they are embarking on in this kind of a detail. I really want to say to them, the South Africans are looking upon them now to take the country out of the quagmire that we're in, insofar as the corruption is concerned. I am really impressed, Chairperson. I think they took that mandate very seriously and they've upped the game. Thank you very much. Chair, this information is very clear to me. It is the steps that are being taken already. I'm also, Chair, very happy to get to hear from them on the action that they are taking on the people that are alleged to be involved in corruption, who are now busy resigning from their posts in trying to get away with murder. I think I'm happy with this, that they are saying that they are doing to make sure that nobody is allowed to get away with murder, Chair. We can safely say to get away with murder, because when it comes to issues of PPEs, Chair, we are taking a responsibility for not delivering in time, sometimes not delivering at all. And now what we get from the facts presented to us, delivering of wrong and sometimes not properly delivered according to the laws that determines. Chair, they are talking about maladministration, which I really would want to hear more on whether there are timelines insofar as the departments are concerned in matters of disciplinary processes, because I hear very clear Advocate Mutibi saying they then sometimes had to give over to departments for them
to speak more on this. Now I'm joined by Siyabonga Mia.
Colleagues, I'm going to ask for the very last time, because we have been doing this for the longest of time now, really. Everybody should be au fait with this. Let's not cause unnecessary disruptions, please. Dolasha, you may proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair. I would want to ask from Advocate Mutibi and the team whether departmental heads are being given timelines on the issues of the disciplinary processes in departments. I'm asking this question, Chair, because I really wouldn't want us to miss this one. It should not get lost within the cracks. I think we must get this information as they are doing. Which department are those? Where are the processes? Whether ourselves, through your office, Chair, were able to make those departments to account directly to us. And there should be timelines put so that we don't have this thing that will carry on forever. So that's my request, Chair. Chair, I'm also happy with the fact that these teams are also following the issues where the PFMA is being undermined and disciplinary action are being taken. Now, Chair, this is a very good precedent for us. I think as we're going to follow this, we need to hear from even provinces. I think Gauteng has made a very good example. Now, as the team is embarking on the investigation and culprits are being identified, would want to hear from those provinces on what they are doing because the taxpayers are waiting for all of us to act where the wrong has been identified. So we must sustain what has been happening in Gauteng and really congratulate the premier there, but we must keep the pace and make sure that this happens as soon as the team can, so that we can get to see the outcome. Because, Chair, for a longer time, some of the cases in other allegations have been going on forever, and there hasn't been some conclusions in those. Chair, the reinforcement of FICA. I hear Advocate Mutibi saying his research team is doing some work. Can you also get to hear the timelines in that? Because if there's anything that we can do as SCOPA to your office, we must be able to assist in this regard, Chair, to make sure that all this happens within a very short space of time. Chair, when it comes to the resources requirement, I guess we should also be made aware on what resources are needed here, who can provide those, what is the approach, so that ourselves we can assist all the teams to make sure that whatever resource is needed in doing their work is made available. Not only available, Chair, but with the necessary speed. So that, Chair, by the end of this year, the latest, we must see more and more people appearing in court for the allegations that they are facing. On the presentation of the general, it is administrative, it's supposed to be like that. However, I'm impressed with the coordination that is taking place within these bodies, Chair, in making sure that they deal with corruption in its totality. Might not have understood all their details, but it makes me happy to understand that there's a lot of coordination in between, so that whenever the case goes to court, nothing would be left for any chance. Everybody, Chairperson, regardless of whose name that person is, which position the person is occupying, everybody who's being alleged to have been involved in corruption must face the law, Chairperson. I'm very, very excited with the progress report that you are receiving from all the teams. Thank you very much, Chair. That will be my take in this regard. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much, Ma'am Dolashe. Can we go to Honorable Van Minen?
Thank you very much, Chair. And I just want to echo Honorable Tolashe with regards to welcoming this report. And the various people who've given input to that. But I've just got some specific questions on the issue of the SIU. When it comes to, I think it was slide 20, the completed matters, they talked about the Gauteng Southwest TVET College issue, and it indicates there was an unknown value and an unknown number of service providers. If that is the case, I just want to know how that matter can be deemed to be complete. My second question, I think, was slide 36 regarding the cash recovered. It indicated a number of acknowledgement of debts. Now, I want to know if the money reflected, was that the amounts reflected in the acknowledgement of debt, or was it the money actually reclaimed? And in terms of the AODs, acknowledgement of debts, what is the remedy if there is a default by those parties who've signed? And then my third question relates to the matters in front of a special tribunal of the SIU and the preservation orders. Now, we all know that money has a tendency to move and move very rapidly. In fact, we've seen that in some of the presentations. So I want to know about the efficacy of the preservation orders, and are they able to actually get those preservation orders timeously before money starts moving from account to account? And if, in fact, the money does move, are they able to trace where that money goes in such a way that the preservation order would be effective? Thank you.
Okay, right. Honorable Liz. Honorable Liz, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, thank you. The first thing is, I think, to echo what the sentiments already expressed by others, in the sense that the amount of work taking place on this particular malfeasance of PPE is impressive, and we hope to see really good consequences coming, well, appropriate consequences coming out of all this good work. I would like to request that the investigations that have been finalized by the SIU, the report by its very nature, it's a very limited report because there's very limited time. So I'm not being in any way critical of that. But I would request, Mr. Chairman, that the finalized investigation reports be made available to us, and we can then deal with those as we see appropriate, if that can be done. Mr. Chairman, whilst the work is impressive, there's a huge volume of work for these agencies. A lot of it's coming out of the Zondo Commission, but from all sorts of places, it's huge. And whilst it's important that we look at what resources are required, the key issue, we raised this with the NPA head at a previous meeting, is actually funding. We have the medium-term budget policy statement coming up. It's a proposal on the part of the Minister of Finance and the Cabinet. Parliament can and should look very critically at that proposal and make recommendations. Budget for their section, department, directorate for the current financial year, tax year. Just a global figure. We don't need the breakdown of salaries and all the other expenses, but just a global figure from each of them, please, Mr. Chairman. And then, yeah, someone like myself needs to look very carefully at the coming budget and work with our team to see if there is further budgetary amounts that could be allocated. And I'm sure there are. There's a lot of wasteful expenditure taking place, as we can see from these very presentations today, billions of rand wasted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Thank you very much, Honorable Liz. Because Honorable Somi is also on the ad hoc committee for the new AG, can I hand over to him and then I will come back to this the sequence that we had. Babu Somi, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to members of the committee and the heads of various institutions. Yes, indeed, this is a very impressive picture on the current standing of these matters, which are somewhat worrisome on the expenditure of the amount allocated to intervene at the time of crisis, which itself presents some kind of advocating for the fact that government through the president has shown some kind of prudence in advancing the fact that things must happen as institutions spend these amounts. As we would know the Auditor General has been involved in assisting through the audit operations for the expenditure to advise various departments on a number of defective matters in as far as the expenditure is concerned, which brings the point the real time on time audit is somewhat adequate as something to be preemptively assisting to drive away any attempts to do what would be an infringement in as far as the management and accountability on the financial side. So I really appreciate the fact that these institutions have gotten to that work, and visibly there's a clear instance which reflect various actions which have been taken. The only area which I would really want to advance, which might probably be something which you'd need to look into. We have been talking about this in various instances, looking into the synergy of actions as the other steps prevail. For example, you'd find out that the SIU would look into its own investigations, and some claims and referrals would be made, and the actions would be somewhat derailed by particular areas of infringement. So it could be of help if indeed such interventions are very quick in themselves, and so that they show a form of deterrent to enforce on those who would want to take a corruptible route, not to do so by seeing such a kinds of acts from the law enforcement agencies, as it is the case. The third instance is the instance which talks to the fusion center, the wisdom of setting that kind of an institutional basis for the ability of enforcing the observance of the law, whether it's on the basis of MFMA or PFMA, to ensure that the findings that are made against certain parameters are somewhat followed. As a matter of an example, the fact that it has been referred that the AG has made about 80 related findings, which are somewhat followed by various agencies. It indicates in themselves that at least the immediate action, which is somewhat the government, is on the ball to ensure that we fight in reality matters of corruption. And we know for a fact that these matters are litigious, so they need a bearing of support on the investigative capability, which is going to anchor an approach of a high standard of quality of such investigations, which is going to guarantee that if the litigations are somewhat taking place, the prosecutorial authorities would themselves be supported by such qualitative investigative capacity. So the matter of existence of such centers, as an example, the fusion center to support this kind of work, should be hailed. And if the establishment has then been the cause of wanting to fight the scourge of corruption and crime, the support in terms of the need of anchoring that infrastructure is needed. If that support is based on personnel or in the financial mode, we know the country currently is suffering in terms of, it might be that some form of a percentage kick in of the actual gains, whether through the SIU or any other forms some amounts would be kept by these institutions, while some amount would have to be transferred to Treasury for the country. Those are the arguments which should go into what the various portfolio committees mainly charged with this responsibility as a matter of policy ought to deal with. You see, if you recover 10 rand, let's say 1 rand remains with these authorities, so that they should continue with their own work just to enhance, to encourage as well that the functionality of these institutions is anchored on their basis of more capacity, and guarantees the ethical conduct in the institutional base, as it is concerning us one way or the other. And so my view is a view which seeks to say in a guarantee for such qualitative aspects of work and your reporting, your accountability in advancing these matters, let us deepen that kind of synergy so that matters are not let to lie for longer when they are finalized by a particular institution. In this case, as reported by the SIU, referred to a prosecuting authority, and in that instance, you find some kind of fast-tracking of those matters going forward. So on my side, I think we need to appreciate this a kind of commitment, this kind of work going forward, and hail the fact that it was indeed a good for government through the president that these kinds of steps had to be undertaken going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. Honorable Hadebe, thank you very much. Babu Somyo, let's go to Honorable Hadebe with an H. Kati Sakinapig, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and welcome to the colleagues. It's been hectic, Chair. Chair, the next arrest is on Thursday. We will be keeping our ears on the ground and our eyes wide open, Chair. This is a clear indication that this sixth administration is really serious about the fight against corruption. And I'd like to take this opportunity, Chair, and welcome both reports and truly appreciate the great and sterling work done thus far. Indeed, Chair, one now can see and witness that the wheels of justice are turning. And soon we'll see a consequence management on steroids. We've been yearning for a very long time, Chair. Now, finally, one can say with confidence that we keep up the good work, and kudos to our agencies, Chair. Having said that, Chair, I've got a few issues of concern. Let me start with the report of SIU, slide 20. And I think my colleague has touched on this, but I want to expand. On slide 20, Chair, case number 2, it is alleged that there is irregular appointment of service providers for relatives and friends by a certain principal. However, Chair, the number of service providers are unknown and the contract value is unknown. Now, the question will be, how did you conduct your investigation and arrive at the conclusion that this tender is irregular, yet you don't know the service provider and the contract value? I'd like to get a sense and an understanding, how was that possible? Surely, when you have arrived at the conclusion and the determination that there were irregularities, you would have been in a position to determine the contract value and who the service provider was. That's my first question, Honorable Chair. And in the manner and the speed that Hawks is moving, one would advise them that they must also ensure that there's enough orange overalls. And if it needs be, they must make sure that there's a legal tender for orange overalls. Let me move, Chair, to matters in progress, and Advocate Mutibi, you'd assist me on these issues. first on slide 23. Honorable Chair, on matters in progress, there are certain cases where people are mentioned as individuals. For an example, slide 23, case number 2, the Gauteng Department of Education. It's written, it is alleged that a high profile individuals are implicated in the PEE tender fraud. Why are they mentioned as high profile individuals when on the same page on case number 8, on the National Department of Correctional Services, you have mentioned the person. It's written, it is alleged that the CFO awarded PEE contract to friends and families. By virtue of mentioning the CFO of the national department, you indirectly indicating who that person is. Yet on the very same slide, you're saying high profile individuals. I'd like to get a sense and understanding, Chair, why the inconsistencies in reporting on matters or on progress. And I can mention some few cases as well on slide 27, case number 43, the Northern Cape search. It says tender allegedly awarded to prominent officials. Again, a high profile individual, prominent officials were not given names, yet the CFO of the National Department of Correctional Services was mentioned. And on slide 30, again, individuals are mentioned, the name of Prof. Lukele and Ms. Lisonyane, summons were issued against them to recover 43 million. But when you again go to slide 33, the last case, we are told fraud against officials and service provider in respect to services of Free State Province and Treasure. Why the inconsistencies in the very same slide, certain service providers are mentioned, the company names, but others were told official and service providers. I'd just like to get them a sense and understanding, Chair. I'm raising these issues, Chair, because these are public documents now and our meetings are conducted in the full view of public. We therefore don't want an assumption that certain high-profile individuals are protected, yet certain individuals are mentioned. So I'd like to get a logic and an understanding of this style of reporting, Chair. Otherwise, we really appreciate the great work that is done by SIU. Let me now move on to the report on Hawks, Chair, the most popular agency at this current juncture in our country. On issues of the timeline on cases under investigation, I'd like to get a sense and an understanding on the Fusion Center cases. It says, Chair, Fusion Center cases are most ready for enrollment within months, in contrast with general serious corruption cases taking over years. So the question would be, will all these COVID-19 cases be allocated as Fusion Center cases as it was activated on the 18th of May, so that it can expedite and speed up the processes of enrolling all the cases? Can I just get a clarity on that aspect, Chair? The second point under the Hawks and MPA, factors that are affecting timelines for cases, the tender processes and all bid document processes, statement and meeting of minutes, it's listed as one of the issues that are affecting the timeline. Then one wants to ask the question, Chair, the information gathered and collected by the IMC, the Interministerial Committee, which was established on the 6th of August, and that information, doesn't that information contain all the above information you are required? Because the reason why that a committee was established, it was precisely to assist and speed up the processes of information collection to enable the agencies to move with speed in prosecution and dealing with cases. So if I see this statement listing one of the issues that are affecting the timeline of cases, the question is that information relevant? If yes, how come this is listed as a challenge that is affecting your timeline? And secondly, the obtainment of search and seizure warrant check. Understanding the context and the nature in which these cases ought to be concluded expeditiously. Why is it a challenge to obtain search and seizure warrant? And what can the Minister of Justice do to expedite or assist in this regard? Is this a normal and understandable process that in getting the search and seizure warrant, it takes time? Is there anything that can be done to expedite the process? Because ours, as I've indicated earlier, we want to see all these culprits in orange overalls. 2020 must be the year of orange overalls. So if there are any bottlenecks and hindrances, we need to be aware so that we can do whatever it takes to ensure that we deal with those bottlenecks. So those two are an area of concern for me, especially if we have a ministerial task team and we have the Minister of Justice. I believe that such a bottlenecks can be expeditiously resolved. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hatshepsut. Honourable Mkhonto will be the last one.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to the honourable members and colleagues who have joined us today. Chair, I will take this opportunity and welcome the presentations. A lot of work has been done, Chair. There is a lot of cases that are being dealt with. Can we then have, in terms of timelines, percentages of the identified cases in terms of progress reporting? Because we are dealing with a lot of cases here. Chair, I want to make questions and inputs. As the SIU was making a presentation, there is a possibility of duplication of beneficiaries. These institutions, some of them, I don't understand why they had to spend a lot of money on PPEs and other COVID-19 related procurements. Like, for example, the Department of Housing. I'm asking myself, who are the beneficiaries of those PPEs if the procurement was about PPEs? Chair, the SIU is not the first institution to report about employees resigning when they are confronted with allegations of wrongdoing. The SOEs, some of the SOEs came with the same risk of people resigning. I don't know whether labor relations laws do allow what I'm going to suggest, Chair, that all the institutions where the SIU and other law enforcement agencies have identified that there are wrong things that have been done, resignation of employees be put on hold until investigations are concluded and employees are given clearance certificates to be able to resign. If law does allow that, I think this is what we have to do, Chair, because I think our resources, state resources are being stretched into looking at investigations, and then we have to look at people, whether they are resigning or not. But if we can just put that on hold, legally so, I think that will be better. I will reiterate what Honorable Hadebe has said, that the SIU, they are saying one of their risks is that they don't have enough resources. Chair, by the powers vested upon you, can you please go back to the IMC or call them before this committee so that they are able to tell us exactly what is going on? Because they promised, they said one of the reasons why this committee was established is because they want to make sure, they want to support these institutions, and they will make sure that these institutions have adequate resources. So it's very disappointing to hear today that these institutions, they are still complaining about them not having enough adequate resources. Chair, the General Libeya, in the fusion center approach and methodology, he talked about the prevention phase where there is ethics management. Hey, Chair, under the current conditions, I don't think there is any ethics. When you look at these reports, there is no ethics at all. Can we then, Chair, the institutions look at the huge amount of funds deposited, mistakenly deposited into accounts. If there is no collusion between the department's officials and the owners of those accounts, I think we can find something there, Chair. Most of the things that I have recorded, Chair, the honourable members have alluded to them, so I'm not going to waste your time. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks very much, Honourable Mkhonto. Honourable Hadebe says there's one question, so let's get that one question and then get responses. We're doing good for time, colleagues, so no pressure. All right, Honourable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chair. We are very progressive. Chair, my question is in relation to the rand value of contracts that are being investigated. We now know, Chair, that it's not 500 billion that has been squandered, contrary to the popular view, but it's actually 15.6 billion that has been spent to date. And out of that, Chair, only 10.5 billion is under investigation. So the question that one wants to ask is that the 10.5 billion, will it increase in the near future, or is that all that has been investigated and the figure won't increase? Because even if you look into the cases that have been referred for special tribunal, it's only 222 million out of 10.5 billion. So I'd like to get a sense and understanding that there is a possibility that in future we'll see the value of 10.5 billion increasing, because as things stand to us, it indicates that only 67% is under investigation and 33% procurement was done overboard and there's nothing untoward. Thank you, Chief.
All right. Thank you very much, colleagues, for those very detailed and substantive questions and comments on the presentations that we have received. I just want to not to be inconsistent with the positive nature and outlook of colleagues insofar as the appreciation of the good work has been done. I think it is incumbent but which will qualify that appreciation to the law enforcement agencies that are here, that the appreciation we have is conditional. Conditional in that we want to see the progress that you have made and the arrests that have been made and the investigations that you have made translated into effective consequence management. And by that I mean convictions, successful prosecutions, recoveries for the state, and of course, in the flip side of the coin, is to ensure that the government departments and entities actually, they too themselves, once you have actually investigated and given recommendations and so on, that internally the disciplinary processes run their full course. All of that is incumbent on thorough investigations, which are not going to leave loopholes for people to actually escape justice. I make this point because ultimately what we have heard today is clearly grand looting of the highest order in a time of crisis, and specifically a health crisis, which has sharply exposed the fault lines of inequality and the challenges which our people have, and of course clearly the distance which we still have to travel to the future to ensure that there is access to healthcare for all South Africans, a schooling infrastructure itself is readily available in a manner which pushes back on the frontiers of inequality is concerned. And so ultimately, all of this is a humanitarian question. It's a social question, it's an economic question, which is anchored in political will to actually do the right things. And so anybody who's then looting in a time of crisis compounds the problem of poverty and inequality. And in my view, this kind of corruption is in itself a crime against humanity. And therefore, if we are not going to be in a position to successfully prosecute, we are aiding and abetting a culture that will set a precedent that it's okay to loot because there's no consequences. And so that is the mammoth task and responsibility, which is the last line of defense falls on the shoulders of the law enforcement agencies, that we are in a crisis. And we need to push back on the kind of corruption we have seen specifically here, but generally in every procurement outside this COVID-19 related expenditure, so that deterrents are entrenched and embedded as a norm. And so that's what I'm saying. I would want to qualify the appreciation of members. We are certainly quite happy that you have moved with the kind of speed that you have moved, and that there are already pockets of excellence that we can speak to. May those pockets of excellence be the norm, and that they set into motion a precedent which will give confidence to South Africans that when all else has failed or is failing, law enforcement doesn't. And so your independence in that regard is very, very important as well. But we can't have this kind of grand looting of resources intended to save people's lives. And we normalize it by not being successful in the prosecution. So that must be the ultimate goal. And that, for me, is what brings full circle everything that has been presented to us today. On the issue of Gauteng, I just want to check whether the SIU has actually investigated the infrastructure build projects insofar as COVID-19 is concerned. The issue of field hospitals amongst them that we have been reading about and hearing about, and that what is the progress in that regard. I think, colleagues, the issue around resources that you have raised, we must take time to have the IMC back because the commitments were made to us that resources would be made available. But also that too must be qualified, that whilst we pursue ensuring that resources are made available along the lines that Honorable Lewis, Honorable Hadebe, and Honorable Mkhonto have pointed to. The law enforcement agencies can and still and must function with what they have currently and not wait for the full tranches of what they expect. So work can still be done, but I think there is merit in that, because the commitment was made, and we will have to look at the medium-term budget policy statement closely and very, very sharply in that regard to make sure that we respond positively to the pleas that have been made here today. I think the final aspect on my side is, after hearing all the good stories this morning and the imminent Thursday arrests, which of course some people are billing as Hollywood style arrests, but the bottom line is that we need to see you being arrested. It inspires confidence in South Africans when there's a boots on the ground approach, which exposes you from the word go. So I think whilst some people take it in jest, but it's a necessary exercise as part of the deterrence. But what are the challenges that you are faced with? We've heard all the good stories. Because obviously we do need to look at the issues around cooperation amongst yourselves, obviously, but also we need to know where are the problems which would impede you from actually moving at an even greater speed as part of protecting the public purse. On the issue of the resignations on the eve of disciplinary processes, we looked at that last week, and I'm sure colleagues are still applying their minds. I had made the suggestion that we'd probably have to meet with Public Service Administration, Employment and Labour, and COCTA as an initial step to see what kind of framework, operational frameworks we can build into the law to ensure that we push back on that as well. Part and parcel of it, of course, is the freezing of pensions, but also the blacklisting of people. You can't have a situation of people hopping around everywhere and being recycled. We also need to deal with that as well, that people steal at Department A, and the next thing they resurface in an entity somewhere else. It's one government, it's one public purse, and so your wrongs or the allegations before you must follow you to wherever you go until they are brought to a logical legal conclusion. Right, colleagues, let's hand over to the law enforcement agencies. We'll start with the SIU, go to the Hawks and NPA, and then if there are follow-ups, we'll do those, and then we will bring it to a close. Babumtip, over to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We really do appreciate the appreciation from Honorable Members of SCOPA. Chair, we do take to heart the qualification that you have put to this appreciation, and I think it's rightly placed that as we continue to do this work, the ultimate test is whether there's consequence management in all its forms, whether there's civil litigation or disciplinary action or any other form of consequence management. We take that to heart and will ensure that as we do our work, that becomes the ultimate result, and speedily. We appreciate the words of Honorable Tolashe. In terms of, I think most of the comments were really around, you know, the kind of work we do, and we take into account the comments on people resigning, thinking that they can get away. We appreciate those comments, Chair, and the work that the Honorable Committee will do in conjunction with other stakeholders, be it COCTA and the others. This remains an issue. and we continue to see it. So it will really be appreciated if some framework can be facilitated. We are available to make any input that we may be required to do. Honorable Tolasha asked the question whether there are timelines in taking disciplinary action. At the moment, when we refer matters for officials or disciplinary action to be taken against officials, of course, there's an expectation of speedy action. We do not make specific timelines, and perhaps it's something that we need to take into account, that when we do a referral, we can probably ask for the state institution to report within a certain timeline. So we've taken that into account. Of course, our expectation, as we say, we expect that these accounting authorities and accounting officers should take action speedily once the matter has been brought to their attention. But it will be, of course, helpful if we can augment that referral with a specific timeline when they should report back. The other question was, let's sustain what's happening in Gauteng. We have taken that into account. Of course, as we investigate across all the provinces, when the evidence presents itself, that we can take action, we would really want to make sure that we do that. So that, of course, we do our work on an even-handed basis. There is no one that's left out. With regard to the prominent or exposed, politically exposed people, yes, the legal team has done some research. The current position, we have articulated it to SCOPA. That's our view. But we have also made a recommendation. And perhaps in this regard, we will make a systemic recommendation to appropriate state institution. But of course, it would be helpful if SCOPA as well, Honorable Committee, could also just sort of guide in this regard in terms of the possible legislative changes. But as it sits now, where the procurement process has been followed and all the compliance areas have been found to be in order, the fact that you are linked or in any other way to any politically exposed person does not make the procurement process irregular. So going forward, there could be those a consideration for legislative changes. We are heartened, Chair, that the issue of resources will be sort of supported. We are making this point simply because if it's really not addressed, we are likely to see our business being affected down the line. We know that we have made our submissions as they were required. We are hoping that in the adjustment budget that's coming, we may hear positive news in that regard. We've taken note of the fusion center coordination. I'm sure General Libia can also respond or just comment on that. I think it was really a commentary note. Honorable Van Linen, on the acknowledgement of debt, that's one of the processes that we use where the service providers, in many instances, they would then approach the department or SIU in the process of investigating. And when we confront them with allegations, they would offer to pay. And that payment, as I indicated, is then discussed with the department to ensure that the interests of the department are protected. And when the department is okay with that, and we are also happy with that, then one of the mechanisms is to sign an acknowledgement of debt. Now, the follow-up question was, how do we enforce the acknowledgement of debt when it's not adhered to? The next steps that follow after that is that we would then, institute civil litigation process. You know, all the processes, of demanding the payment. If there's still a failure, then we issue summonses and then ultimately go into the civil litigation process. I need to just confirm, Chair, that I received a message that all of those acknowledgement of debt that have been signed have actually been paid as we speak today. So there's been acknowledgement of debt paid and they have been honored immediately. So the service providers have paid, and those are some of the monies that will be transferred back to the state institution. Are we on the special tribunal? Are we able to trace the money in such a way that the freezing becomes effective? As I indicated, that and this is where one example where the fusion center has really proved to be very effective in helping us as agencies to trace where the monies have resulted to or ended to, through the help of our colleagues at the Financial Intelligence Center. We have really found that very, very effective. So we are able to trace where the monies have ended, and we are able to then obtain restraint orders relating to that. And as my colleague Dr. Wells has indicated, there's initial step of freezing, and then we go to the special tribunal where the parties come and argue whether the interim order should not be made permanent, and then the next steps follow of setting the contract aside and recovery. So when we recover, we then ensure that those amounts that have been freezed become part of the recourse, where we can have recourse to those amounts, so that we avoid what's called hollow judgments. So that we found that to be useful. Honourable Lees, I just picked up on the question relating to the final investigation report, if it can be made available to the Honourable Committee. I think the Honourable Lees, your observation is accurate. We've really tried our best such that we demonstrate to the Honourable Committee that there's work going on, there's work done, there's work in progress, there are outcomes, and what our observations are, and we articulate those cases. The progress report, the second six-weekly report was presented to the President last week. It was last week on the 14th of October. And when the President addressed the nation, he did indicate that the SIU report will be made public. So in this regard, the report, the full progress report has been made, presented to the President, and we know by now that the President intends to make that public. I do not have the timelines now in terms of when that report would be made public. The total amount budget for the agencies, I'm uncertain, Chair, Honourable Chair, whether the Honourable Lees wanted us to make those amounts available now or known now, in which case I'm sure our CFOs could, the CFO at least in our regards, can indicate whether we've got that amount readily. Failing which, then we can respond to the Honourable Committee in writing indicating those amounts. Honorable Somio, the management and accountability on the financial side, we do appreciate those comments, and as I indicated in my comments, that we would really want to be a critical part of ensuring that we all return the integrity of public accounts to the status that we want to see, and holding those responsible to account. So in this regard, we will continue to indicate the findings that we have made, and wherever required, we will make recommendations. We've taken into account the issue of synergy of actions and the speed of action. The issue about recovery mechanisms, and we're really hoping that this comment and the thought by the honourable member could really find its way forward one way or another. The reason why I say that, honourable chair, is that amongst others, and I think we've commented and reported to the honourable committee, but amongst others, as SIU, what we're doing in the legislative amendment of the Enabling Act of the SIU, we are also looking at the amendment relating to the funding model of SIU. We would really be welcome to that thought that the possibility of holding a certain percentage of what we recover. But of course, it will be a subject of engagement to all the relevant parties. Honourable Chair, I think I'll move over now to Honourable Hadeva's questions, and I'm reminded that Honourable Van Minen also raised a question around slide number 20, item number 2. We really apologize that on the presentation that was sent to SCOPA did not have much detail, and the reason was that for it to have the not applicable note and unknown note, I'm informed by the investigating team, and Mr. Lakhato, you can come in if need be, that when these matters were reported, what happens, Honourable Chair, is that the matters get assessed, and of course the investigating teams go and investigate these allegations. In this regard, I am informed that the finding of the investigating team was that there were no PPEs procured by the TVET College. And as a result of that finding, there would obviously be no value. So the finding of the investigation relating to those allegations was that they could not be substantiated, that in the sense that there were no PPE procured by the college, as alleged by the whistleblower. And then the related question on slide number 23, of course we do take into account the comments by Honorable Hadebe in the sense of just being consistent in the presentation. But here what we're indicating in that column of summary of allegations, we seek to report the allegations as reported. For example, we would receive the allegations from a whistleblower indicating that high profile people have been involved, like in the case of slide 23, number 2. And then it's up to the investigation team to go out there and investigate, if we say high profile, then the whistleblower or whoever it is has to indicate who has been pointed by the allegations, and the investigating team has to find the evidence. And when we make a finding, we will make a finding against a specific person. So in this case, and in the case of number 8, is how the allegations were presented. And then we report to SCOPA as allegations were received. These allegations are still a subject of investigation. They still need to be tested. And when we make a finding, assuming that we make a finding against, in this regard, say the CFO, the manner of reporting, if we have referred, for example, the civil litigation process against anyone, we will not mention, and this is probably the standard approach, even in criminal matters. You know, we'll not mention the name of the person until the matter has appeared at court. So in this regard, once the allegations are tested and we make appropriate findings, we will deal with it along the lines of guarding and mitigating the legal risk of not mentioning the names. I need to be quite emphatic that we are not in any way seeking to protect anyone at any level. So if we make the finding and the evidence is sufficient to make a finding against anyone, we will make that finding and we will report accordingly at an appropriate, if it's a subject of court process, we will mention once the people have appeared in court. And an example of that is the one in Gauteng, where the Honorable Hadev has indicated that we have mentioned Lesonyane and Lukele. Those names appear on the summonses. They have been presented at the special tribunal. They are public documents, so that's why we are able to mention them in the presentation. Honorable Mkonto, who are the beneficiaries of the PPEs? As we investigate, we do, of course, go into those kind of details, whether the PPEs were delivered or, well, ordered appropriately, whether they delivered appropriately, and whether they reached the destination that was intended and benefited the intended beneficiary. So in this case, once we have made that determination, we will obviously make an appropriate finding. I'm glad that Honorable Mkonto also made a comment around the people who resigned. This Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, this really requires an urgent attention. Honorable Mkonto mentioned that perhaps we should consider instances where resignations are kept on hold. In this regard, of course, the employer-employee relationship is governed by the Labor Relations Act and all other related legislations. The legal position as we speak is uncertain whether an employer can really refuse an employee to resign. If there has been further legal development in this regard, I would really appreciate that if they are surfaced. But as we speak now, we really require some framework that would ensure that we deliberately address this recycling of people who have been pointed to have done irregularities or wrongdoings in other departments, and then they resurface in another department. Of course, what we are doing at the moment is that if we become aware of those instances, Honorable Chair, on the public service side, we are informed and we know that there's a section in the Public Service Act that says, you know, we could even now refer the disciplinary process to the, call it the receiving department, which has received this person, and then we follow up. We've got a few of those instances where we have taken the disciplinary referral to the department where this person has resurfaced in. But otherwise, I think on a broader scale, we require a specific framework to address this issue. On the, I think Honorable Hadebe came up with a question on the rent value of the contract investigators. As we speak now, we are investigating about, it's about 930 service providers through contracts, and the numbers kept on going up, right? So we continue, since the proclamation was issued, we've been receiving this contract, these allegations relating to specific contracts. So the number continues to grow when whistleblowers and other public members report this. But what we have done, and like we have done in the presentation, we do face our investigation and say these parts from the allegations reported on a certain date to, for example, in 3 months' time, we need to have completed all those allegations and investigated them and reached outcomes. So the direct response to the question is, yes, the amounts will vary from time to time depending on the matters that continue to be reported. We unfortunately cannot close out. We can't say to the public that if you have not reported by a certain date, we will never take your allegations anymore. So now we are enjoined, we are duty bound to receive the allegations, and we are duty bound to investigate those allegations. So we find ourselves in this situation, Honorable Chair, that although we might have put a certain timeline, allegations keep coming through. Honorable Chair, with your closing remarks, we have taken into account the conditional appreciation. I think I've already indicated that. The issue around infrastructure, yes, the infrastructure does fall within the proclamation, and the investigating team has ensured that now they receive attention now. So there's already processes underway to investigate infrastructure builds in all the provinces, or in Gauteng as it is, or in other provinces where there's been infrastructure built. So the focus has been very much on the PPEs, but we are now moving swiftly into the infrastructure build, and we know that the big ticket items in terms of cost are in the infrastructure build. We will move swiftly into that space. Okay, I think at this stage, relating to the impediments that makes us not to move with speed, I think, and my colleagues can probably also come in, I think we are now at a stage with the fusion center where we have really, you know, addressed the kind of overlaps and the cooperation and collaboration. And I think going forward, we will continue now to see we'll continue to see those cooperation mechanisms giving us the benefits we are looking for. Chair, thank you very much. I'll pause here in terms of questions that I could directly respond to. Thank you very much.
That's fine. Thank you very much, HOU. General Libya, can I hand over to you and to Advocate Batoy?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. May I first say that as a point of departure, we appreciate the comments and the observations that have been made by the Honorable Members with regard to the efforts that are being put in place by law enforcement in an endeavor to deal with the challenge of corruption. We will strive to continue to improve on the work that we are doing. So all those messages of commendations are being appreciated and will be carried over to the operators who are on a daily basis faced with the work at hand. Chairperson, I'm not going to be dealing with the comments on individual members, but I will focus on those areas that require a response. Starting with the comment by Honorable Lees regarding the total budgets of the agencies. We do have the figure, Honorable Chairperson, for the current financial year, we have been allocated 2.1 billion rands. That is the gross budget for the DPCR. Honorable Chairperson and members, the next area that I require comment questions raised by the Honorable Hadebe, starting with the issue of the information that is available, that has been provided to the Interministerial Committee as to why will we still struggle if the information is available. Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members, the information that is available will, of course, assist us in ensuring that we know the type of information that is there. But for the purpose of putting into a case docket to be produced at court, where the authenticity will be among the things that need to be proved, it has to be obtained in a particular way where somebody else shall have to certify that this is a copy if the original is not produced. It is in that regard that we still need to get those documents and be satisfied that the original of those are available and intact. They have not been tampered with. It goes to the issue of search and seizure. Again, Honorable Chairperson and members, the process of obtaining this authority of searching and seizing, there is a need for the basics to convince those who authorize the search warrant and seizure to ensure that authority is given in a legal way. So that is based on the initial investigation and the affidavits that need to be attached to the application for a search warrant and the like. Those obviously take into consideration the jurisdiction of the areas where this thing has happened. If there is more than one jurisdiction, each jurisdiction shall have to ensure that it authorizes those. But the availability of those documents make it easy because we know where the documents emanate from for the purpose of packaging that for court. My colleagues also in the NPA will also comment on this aspect. There is also a question by Honorable Mkonto with regard to the area of ethics, the monies that are being deposited into some accounts. Ethically, people who receive money into their accounts, they are supposed to declare and return back the money where it comes from. If finders were keeping, I think the losers were going to be weeping. I think that if you receive something that you know is not yours and you keep, you utilize it, that is in itself a theft. We have observed some of those that have been arrested who received this and then utilized the funds that they knew does not belong to them. The element of collusion Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is the one that our investigation is focusing on. We want to prove that it is not accidental deposit. It is intentional. That is where we look for the elements of crime. If we are not finding the element of intention, we might probably find the element of negligence. So that talks to the collusion that the Honorable Member has asked. Honorable Chairperson, there is also the question that of challenges that we are faced with as to what is that which needs to be done. Firstly, I need to indicate that we have packaged the challenges that we have and the proposed solutions of the resources that are needed and provided to the Interministerial Committee. I think when the Interministerial Committee was engaging with this Honorable Committee, would have indicated those resources that are needed. But I may add that some of those resources that we have indicated that we need them, we are in the process of acquiring them. And by the first of next month, there will be a new blood that we will be bringing into the DPCI. We have advertised posts, people have applied, we have looked at the qualifications that they have. Something that will assist us looking at the issue of cyber capacity as well as a financial investigation. So those areas, we know the challenges that we have, but we have tabled them. We believe that attention is being given to those. So if we can obviously get those resources that are needed in the form of human resource that the principals are aware of, it will assist us in ensuring that we speed up the process. There are also some areas that we need to highlight that while we are moving at the speed that we are intending to be doing on these matters of COVID-19 that came with COVID-19, the other cases that we had on hand also need the same attention, although they are not as prioritized as the one that needed this urgent attention. We just need to highlight that we have no less than 21,000 of these matters, and 11,000 accused are at court. So those cases, we need to be making sure that they do not collapse. So while we are dealing with these new ones, we also want to make sure that the old ones equally receive attention so that those convictions that the honorable members have hinted on can come to a reality. Those are the areas that honorable chairperson and honorable members, I may comment on. I think the other colleagues from the NPA, as well as those in the FIC, like Dr. Masia Bata, may like to comment further. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
All right. No, thank you very much, General. Advocate Batois.
And then, thank you very much.
Can come in on the issues of the budget once the NPPP is done.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Members. Maybe I'll just start on that point, Chair, on the budget. The NPA budget for 2021 after the adjustment is 4.5 billion. And I want to make a plea, Chair, that, you know, we do know that after the impact of COVID has even constrained our fiscus further than it had been prior to COVID, and is placing a lot of pressure on departments, on the government, and on National Treasury. Chair, but I did raise this at the Portfolio Committee, Justice Portfolio Committee as well, and that if proposed budget cuts for the NPA are implemented, in essence, we were given an increase of 1.3 billion last year over the MTSF period, and if the cuts are implemented, it will wipe out 1.1 of that. So almost everything that we were given to deal with the crisis that the NPA is in has the potential to be wiped out if that happens. So I cannot emphasize strongly enough how crucial it is for us to have the budget we need, and also to spend it properly, and for us ourselves within our own departments to ensure that we are efficient. And so I really, that is a very, very key issue for the NPA, because we've made a lot of progress in trying to capacitate and bring on board, as the general is doing now in the DPCI, what he refers to as new blood and added capacity. But if these cuts are implemented, we will not be able to recruit as aggressively as we have been, over 500 posts less, and we will also not be able to pay those that we recruit in the outer years. So it is a really important aspect, and this is really to capacitate the NPA to the bare minimum and not to where we would actually like it to be. So Chair, I would also like to echo and support my colleague General Libia's plea on behalf of the Hawks, because the bottom line is that if the Hawks are not capacitated properly in terms of the capacities that the General mentioned, in particular relating to financial crime, financial investigations, it makes the work of the NPA ineffective. You know, we are joined at the hip. And so it is so important that the DPCI has the capabilities and capacities to really properly investigate these matters. Otherwise, the entire value chain is affected, and we are not able to then ensure I like what the Honorable Hadebe referred to as consequence management on steroids. We'd all like to see that in terms of ultimately those being held accountable, those that are responsible for the looting now, especially during COVID-19, which is the focus of this discussion, being held accountable. So Chair, 2.1 billion rands for the DPCI, I think there really needs to be, that is in terms of the national government spending, a tiny, tiny drop. And I think a lot more needs to be spent on the Hawks if we want to be effective in terms of dealing with corruption. Chair, I would like to appreciate the comments that colleagues made, and I fully support the conditional appreciation, because in as much as the Fusion Center has certainly given it, it's the start of what could work well, but it is still the start. It is only in place a couple of months. It is showing reasonably good success. We certainly would want it to show a lot more success as we move on. But I think we still got to wait and see how this model works in terms of us ensuring that we effectively, in a very real way, collaborate. And as you mentioned, Chair, in the context of your opening comments, in the context of the ACTT, but to look at avoiding overlaps and ensuring that, we are able to collaborate in a way for maximum efficiency. So I think we still need to work on those things. But as I said, it's early days. And so far, what has been achieved is very, very promising. And we need to ensure that we continue on the right trajectory in this regard, Chair. There weren't many questions specifically directed at the NPA. So I'm just going to generally say that we certainly appreciate the comments of colleagues who emphasize the need for broadly consequence management, but importantly, convictions and those, you know, being held accountable at the end of the day. And so we are working towards that with our colleagues. I want to also really appreciate the work of other colleagues in the FIC who General Lebia mentioned in the beginning of his presentation, but who are not with us on this platform, in particular the Financial Intelligence Center, the Executive Director, Koli Kanyile, and her team, two of them are on this platform, SARS, the South African Revenue Service. So it's really, we want to appreciate, and we are also working closely with the Auditor General's Office. And so I want to emphasize that this is a collaborative effort, and colleagues in those entities, the work must be appreciated on this platform as well. Chair, I'm trying to, I don't think there were any other issues that were specifically raised, but I'm going to ask Advocate de Kock to quickly mention, deal with one issue relating that was raised, and I'm also going to ask Advocate Rabaji, both Deputy National Directors in the NPA, Advocate de Kock in charge of the National Prosecution Service, and Advocate Rabaji in charge of the Asset Forfeiture Unit to address one or two issues. Thank you, Chair.
All right, let's get the deputy NDPPs to respond as the NDPP has suggested, and then we'll
Thank
go
you,
to Abdul. Sure.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much, NDPP, for the opportunity. I just want to confirm from the prosecution side that as far as the resourcing is concerned, as well, that we have allocated the work to our dedicated capacity within the specialized commercial crimes units. And these units are located within our provinces. We are also then building capacity in the provinces that currently do not have the specialized commercial crime unit. There are only four provinces, and we will make sure that those capacities, in consultation with the Department of Justice, that we build those capacities in those provinces. So that is work in progress. And then, of course, these units work very closely operationally within the provinces with the DPCI. And so the project work happens in the provinces. And then the second point, Chair, is just to indicate on the question of and ensuring that there's consequence management. We have matters that are lined up within the next 3 months for enrollment. Some of them are very close to enrollment, and I think that is very good news. And so within the next 3 months, we anticipate that at least a further 12 cases will be enrolled in relation to this particular project that we're working on. Lastly, the question of the warrants, I think General Abeya referred to that as well. So part of the challenge there would be the processes that one has to follow to ensure that we get warrants that are properly motivated and warrants that then can be utilized effectively once it's activated, and that we then, whatever we seize, that we are able to use that information lawfully in the courts. So that is all work in progress. This is not a general problem. There are one or two areas in the country where we pick up individual issues. And so the list in terms of the factors affecting the timeline of cases, those are not generalized problems. It's specific issues in some matters. But we thought in terms of transparency that we just want to place that as some of the factors that potentially will impact on the timeline to get an investigation finalized. For us, of course, in the prosecution, we need to ensure the timeline is shortened so that we are able to make a quick decision for enrollment. And so all of that is happening. But Chair, lastly, with your permission and with the NDPP's permission, could we just ask the head of the FIC Operational Center, who's really effectively coordinating all of us at the FIC, just to add one or two additional points. Dr. Masip Piata is in this meeting with us at the moment. I think it's important for him just to make one or two comments.
Chair, with your permission, Chair, we will be guided by you. But if I may, perhaps Dr. Advocate Rabaji from the asset forfeiture of the NPA, if she could please come in at this point, Chair.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's the guidance. Okay, you can't be having a request with a request, like one money approach.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members, as well as the NDPP. I just want to make two points. As NPA Asset for Feature Unit,
one second. I was still concluding to say the request for the FIC will come in once we are done with the response that Advocate Mutibi wanted to make in so far as the ASIU budgetary issues were concerned. So let's just line it up in that way so we don't confuse our outlook. All right, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, and the NDPP for this opportunity. I just wanted to make two points. As assets for feature units in the NPA, first let me contextualize this. You know, this is a unit that has been seizing assets and forfeiting them to the state for the last 20 years. And we've got very good jurisprudence in this regard. We've got 600 reported cases. And we just feel that this work must grow with impetus. So we are sitting between investigations and prosecutions in the sense that for any assets to be seized, there has to be unlawfulness or unlawful activity detected. So the capacitating of DPCI and assets for feature units is very critical, Chairperson, and in that regard, we are very grateful that this committee is going to make sure that we are capacitated. We will obviously submit very compelling plans that are scoped and that shows the kind of resources we need so that we can get the required budget. Then the second issue, Chair, and it's related to the first issue around capacitating law enforcement, is that we are embarking under the leadership of the NDPP on retrieving the stolen money, even the ones that have left. And beyond seizing assets and working with SIU and other law enforcement agencies using different laws, we do want to retrieve the billions that have left South Africa. And Chair, this is in line with the point that you have made, that you've said that this leaves us with a social issue in the sense that we are allowing the criminals to get away with their ill-gotten gains. This is where we step in. We will not allow that to happen. We are leading a project in NPA of retrieving the assets that are offshore. And in that regard, Chair, it speaks to the issue around resources. And I really would like to make a plea in support of what the other colleagues have said. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for the opportunity.
All right, thank you very much. I caution that let us not ultimately end up having a meeting about resources. I think we can have that discussion at another time. Today we are quite specifically focused on issues of COVID-19 corruption. But we will, of course, we look at that. But I think let us not make it the overarching issue. As I was saying, with what you have, do what you can.
Sure. Yeah.
So far. All right. Advocate Mutibi, can I come to you? And then the FIC, and then colleagues, you can do your follow-ups, and then we can wrap it up. All right. In that fashion, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity regarding the budget. I think I sort of missed it when I responded. Although the CFO is also in the meeting, he can give the exact numbers. But I need to just say, Honourable Chair, that we have identified the need
In view of the proclamations that are growing, we've mapped out the growth of the business, so to speak, in terms of the proclamations that are coming our way and the allegations that keep on being reported. And in view of the account that we have and the skills that we require, we have mapped out what we require, and there's a related budget to that. We have advertised recently after having realized that we need added skills to ensure that now we propel our investigations with speed. We have advertised for various skills that are imminently and urgently required. We require forensic accountants. We've advertised for that simply because we need to enable and capacitate our investigators with the forensic accountants and be able to interpret all these big balance sheets and accounts that we investigate. We've advertised for litigation specialists because the special tribunal work requires even more attention. So those are some. We have advertised for about 26 headcount with various skills. So we've received CVs. We are processing those. We should be making appointments in due course. With regard to the exact budget, we need to just indicate that from a funding model, our funding model is twofold. We do receive the grants through the Department of Justice, and we also charge the fees for the services that we render. Of course, Chair, we have been on record and indicated that some departments are paying, but a good percentage of the departments are not paying, and the debt levels continue to escalate. So this has really just given us the view that strategically the funding model is not sustainable, hence the need for re-engagement. So I'll just give now, Chair, without further ado, to our CFO, who can just mention the exact budget figures. CFO, quickly to you.
Thank you, HIU. The operational budget for the current year that we're in, with regards to the members' question, is a figure of 820 million operational budget, and the capital expenditure budget is a figure of 42 million. As the head has mentioned, unfortunately, we go into a financial year with only a government grant of 443 million for this year, which just takes us over 50%. And hence, the funding model in the medium to longer term needs to be revised. It's very difficult to go into a financial year not knowing whether you're going to have the cash to fund your salaries and your operational expenditure. Thank you, Chair and members.
Okay. All right. FIC. Please unmute, sir.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Am I audible now?
Yes, you are. You may proceed.
That's great. No, thanks for this opportunity and with full submission to the leadership available in this meeting. For me, is just to add one thing. As already invited by Advocate Dukok, just on the question that has been raised by Honorable Minen, when he indicated as to, as the fusion center, what is the model and the modality applied on the basis of effectively following the movement of funds, in order to ensure that there is no dissipation in terms of those movements. And of course, in ensuring that the asset forfeiture unit is effectively served for the purposes of advancing the preservation orders as they are supposed to be. So in this instance, I want to just indicate to the committee and the committee members that as the Financial Intelligence Center, we have a structure that has been created in collaboration with the banking community in the country called SAMLIT, that is the South African Anti-Money Laundering Task Force. So that particular mechanism allows us as the FIC to have the operational arrangement with the banking community in such that when they start picking up suspicious transactions taking place in the movement of funds on their side, they are able to alert us as quick as possible for the purposes of those transactions. And in that instance, we are able to move with speed as provided for in Section 34 of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, that we can be able to freeze those particular transactional activities for a period of 10 days. And we do that on the point of activity for the purposes of making sure that the funds do not necessarily get dissipated. As General Livia's presentation has indicated, on the basis of the slide where issues of preservation are being reflected on, it did indicate that around 64 bank accounts were actually frozen by the FIC for the purposes of assisting this particular work in the context of the fusion center. So that is effectively what our contribution is. But at the end of the day, the ultimate work that we do is, of course, in the context of following the money so that we are able to direct and guide the ultimate work of the asset forfeiture unit, but at the same time, making sure that we ultimately assist our colleagues in the investigation in terms of where did the money ultimately end up to. So that is effectively what we do. But at the same time, we want to confirm that because of the fourth industrial revolution, as explained, the monies in this day and age move very fast. And that is why we had to have a special dispensation with the banking community to be able to assist on these issues. The last thing that I want to indicate is that in the same context that I've just described, we are also effectively helping the investigating community in this instance to be able to get the bank statement, for example, in the context of Section 205 from the banking community. Speedily, under normal circumstances, they will send a request and they will effectively wait for something like a month or so. But with the current arrangement, we are able to intervene, and within a week or so, we are able to ensure that the bank statements are received, and that is able to speed the investigations that has to be taking place. All of the stakeholders within the fusion center are effectively serviced, SIU as well as the JPCI. So that is ultimately the contribution that we just wanted to make in as far as this part is concerned. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. No, thank you very much from the FIC. Right, follow up, the Honourable Hadebe. I see your hand. Right, Honourable Hadebe, and then we'll bring it to a close.
No, thank you so much, Chairperson. I appreciate responses provided. Just one follow-up to Advocate Mutibi. Chair, I fully understand the standard approach in relation to matters that are still under investigation. But the question that I had, it was in relation to matters in progress, as indicated in the report on the very same page. The National Department of Correctional Services, an individual was mentioned by the name of the CFO. Now, that's indirectly giving us who the person is. But on the same page, you have individual referred to as high-profile individual, prominent officials, and service providers without name. Now, the question is, if I understand Advocate correctly, is he saying to us, in those cases where they are high profile and prominent individuals, the whistleblower did not mention or give details of the position and who the individual is, only in respect to the National Department of Correctional Services, the individual position was indicated in the form of a CFO. And that I find it hard to believe. That a whistleblower will go and say, in this department, high-profile individuals were involved. Only one out of these cases where a whistleblower opted to say the high-profile individual and the CFO. Because all these matters, Chair, are still in progress. If indeed we're to follow that standard approach, even in the case of the CFO, they would have said, an official in the department. So I'd like to get an understanding, if my understanding is correct, that only the CFO was mentioned in relation to his position, and others, it was given as high profile and prominent individual. Thank you.
All right, are there any further follow-ups, colleagues? On the issue of the report, in fact, no, let me go to Advocate Mutib and then we'll bring it to a close, colleague. Right, HOU?
Oh, thanks, Chair. Chair, I do understand the comment by the Honourable Member, but at this stage, I'd like to just re-emphasize that whistleblowers report to us in various means, and we draw these reports from the whistleblower platform that we have, and they would, in many instances, just report that there are allegations that in that department XYZ is happening, and that's how we've documented. And I'd like to just bring in our Chief National Investigating Officer, Mr. Lekgetho, who would either reemphasize, because these matters are under his wing, and other provincial heads. Mr. Lekgetho, do you want to just comment?
Thank you, HOU, and thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I can confirm that this is how the matter gets registered in our system, where a whistleblower will just call and say, this is the allegation relating to the Department of Correctional Services, and will register it as it is. In some instances, they will just make it wild, and it's up to the investigation team to make a follow-up with the whistleblower to say, give us more information. But whereas the allegation has been registered as a high-profile individual implicated in PPE tender process. Thank you, Advocate.
I'm logging in again.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think that's really how far we can take that point. That is a subject of allegations reported, and they are investigated as reported. And when we come to the findings, we make findings based on the evidence that has been uncovered from the investigations. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, HOU, NDPP, General Lebeya, and your teams that have been here this morning and this early afternoon. I think, of course, as already indicated, we are expecting that this good work continues, and that there is greater collaboration and cooperation within the law enforcement agencies. I'm sitting here thinking that it's such a huge indictment on South Africa that of all the things that we want more money for is money to investigate corruption. Whereas I always say, if you want to render SCOPA useless and render us jobless, don't do crime. If you do things right, there will be no need for us to exist. But the fact that we are continuously having to pump money into law enforcement agencies does in itself mean that we have not won the war. We should be at a point now where we are saying we are winning the war on corruption and redirecting the resources to other competing priorities which prevail in the state. And so this is something that South Africans have to reflect on, that we are continuously having to pump money to recover money that has been stolen. It's a vicious cycle that has to end. And if up to now our law enforcement agencies are still saying we are short of money, we are short of resources, the question is, when does it end? And this is not an indictment on the law enforcement agencies. It's them saying that if you want us to achieve what it is that's required, give us these resources. But it also, the flip side of it, speaks to a brazen criminal element which is committed to its commitment of corruption. And I think we do have to just have a national reflection, a patriotic reflection on this. It just doesn't augur well. We should position. Colleagues, you raised the issue about the reports of the SIU, and of course the HOU has indicated those go to the presidency. So I think we will have to find time to interact with the presidency to ascertain and determine whether there is implementation of the recommendations amongst the things contained in those reports. So I think we have to take that one forward in that fashion. The SIU has handed over to the presidency as they should, and therefore they need to know from those. But of course, we will look at all the reports that are there and then interrogate them further. On the work of the ACTT, which as indicated, we are not satisfied with, I think we will be scheduling that meeting soon and to deal with that particular one. General Lebea, I think we may have set ourselves up for some attention now in announcing that there will be an arrest on Thursday. One can only hope that the integrity which has characterized the work of the Hawks will not leak now who that is. It's always nice when this is a surprise, you see, and you wake up to the 6 o'clock news bulletin and there it's happening. So I think the heightened expectation now may have set the cat amongst the pigeons. I think we, on reflection, we must not let the cat out of the bag on that one. But we wish you well with that arrest on Thursday, and hope that it will continue to form part of many. I think on the budgetary issues, we will listen in on the MTPBS next week. And the briefing that the minister will have with the Standing Committee on Finance, and then we'll take it from there insofar as the issues of the law enforcement agencies and, of course, the BRRR process which Parliament will be engaged in. We will look at that as well. But what is fundamentally clear is that resources must be made available to law enforcement agencies as a means of actually safeguarding the majority of the public purse. I think what you are asking for is a drop in the ocean in comparison to what is out there, notwithstanding the fact that, of course, there are financial constraints in the public purse in general. But we need to build up the preventative measures to protect what is already there. So, colleagues, I think we can bring it to an end in that fashion. And I want to thank you all colleagues for the interaction that we have had and hope that the good work will continue. As we have indicated before to all the law enforcement agencies, we support the work that you do. But even like the appreciation, our support is conditional that you walk your talk. And either you shape up or you shape out. And I think that as things stand, you are leaning up, you are leaning towards the line of shaping up, considering that law enforcement agencies were not spared the rod of state capture. And of course, you are also having to do cleanup operations in your respective units and divisions to actually ensure that the integrity of your offices and institutions is on par with the expectations of the Constitution and the rule of law. So continue on that operation and endeavor of cleaning up law enforcement agencies themselves so that they can be able to move into all the other spaces. Colleagues, we shall meet tomorrow for the consideration of reports and on the finalization of our outlook for and preparations for our oversight visit to the SABC on Friday. So in the absence of any further comments or questions, I would like to thank you all and wish you a pleasant afternoon, and the meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank Honourable you. Members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thursday.
Thank you, Chair.